Fifth inning. When Tricia woke the next morning, her neck hurt so badly she could hardly turn her head. But she didn't care. The sun was up, filling the crescent-shaped clearing with early daylight. That was what she cared about. She felt reborn. She remembered waking in the night, being itchy and needing to urinate. She remembered going to the stream and putting mud on her stings and bites by moonlight. She remembered going to sleep while Tom Gordon was standing watch and explaining some of the secrets of his closer's role to her. She also remembered being terribly frightened of something in the woods. But of course, nothing had been there watching. It was being alone in the dark that had frightened her, that was all. Something deep in her mind tried to protest this, but Tricia wouldn't let it. The night was over. She wanted to look back on it no more than she wanted to go back to that rocky slope and repeat her roll down the tree with a wasp's nest in it. It was daytime now. There would be search parties galore, and she would be saved. She knew it. She deserved to be saved, after spending all night alone in the woods. She crawled out from under the tree, pushing her pack before her, got to her feet, put on her hat, and hobbled back to the stream. She washed the mud from her face and hands, looked at the cloud of minges and no-see-ums already reforming around her head, and reluctantly smeared on a fresh coat of goo. As she did it, she remembered one of the times she and Pepsi had played beauty parlor when they were little girls. They'd made such a mess of Mrs. Robichaud's makeup that Pepsi's mom had actually screamed at them to get out of the house, not to bother washing up or trying to clean up, but just get out before she totally lost it and swatted them cross-eyed. So out they had gone, all powder and rouge and eyeliner and green eyeshadow and passion plum lipstick, probably looking like the world's youngest strip teasers. They had gone to Trisha's house, where Quilla had first gaped, then laughed until tears rolled down her face. She had taken each little girl by the hand and led them into the bathroom, where she had given them cold cream for cleaning. "Spread upward gently, girls," Tricia murmured now. When her face was done, she rinsed her hands in the stream, ate the rest of her tuna sandwich, then half of the celery sticks. She rolled the lunch bag up with a distinct feeling of unease. Now the egg was gone, the tuna fish sandwich was gone, the chips were gone, and the Twinkies were gone. Her supplies were down to half a bottle of Surge, less really, half a bottle of water, and a few celery sticks. "Doesn't matter," she said, tucking the empty lunch bag and the remaining celery sticks back into her pack. To this she added the tattered, dirty poncho. "Doesn't matter because there's going to be search parties galore throughout the store. One'll find me. I'll be having lunch in some diner by noon. Hamburger, fries, chocolate milk, apple pie a la mode." Her stomach rumbled at the thought. Once Tricia had her things packed away, she coated her hands with mud as well. The sun had found its way into the clearing now. The day was bright, with the promise of heat, and she was moving a little more easily. She stretched, jogged in place a little to get the old blood moving, and rolled her head from side to side until the worst of the stiffness in her neck was gone. She paused for a moment longer, listening for voices, for dogs, possibly for the irregular whoop-whoop-whoop of helicopter blades. There was nothing except for the woodpecker, already hammering for his daily bread. "It's all right. There's plenty of time. It's June, you know. These are the longest days of the year. Follow the stream. Even if the search parties don't find you right away, the stream will take you to people." But as the morning wore on toward noon, the stream took her only to woods and more woods. The temperature rose. Little trickles of sweat began to cut lines through her mud pack. Bigger patches formed dark circles under the armpits of her 36 Gordon shirt. Another, this one in a tree shape, began to grow between her shoulder blades. Her hair, now so muddy it looked dirty brunette instead of blonde, hung around her face. Trisha's feelings of hope began to dissipate, and the energy with which she had set out from the clearing at 7 o'clock was gone by 10. Around 11, something happened to darken her spirits even further. She had reached the top of a slope. This one was fairly gentle, at least, and strewn with leaves and needles, and had stopped to have a little rest when that unwelcome sense of awareness, the one which had nothing to do at all with her conscious mind, brought her on alert again. She was being watched. There was no use telling yourself it wasn't true, because it was. Tricia turned slowly in a circle. She saw nothing, but the woods seemed to have hushed again. No more chipmunks bumbling and thrashing through the leaves and underbrush. No more squirrels on the far side of the stream. No more scolding jays. The woodpecker still hammered, the distant crows still cawed. But otherwise, there was just her and the humming mosquitoes.
"Who's there?"
she called. There was no answer, of course, and Tricia started down the slope next to the stream, holding onto bushes because the going was slippery underfoot. "Just my imagination," she thought, but she was pretty sure it wasn't. The stream was getting narrower, and that was most certainly not her imagination. As she followed it down the long, piney slope and then through a difficult patch of deciduous trees, too much underbrush, and too much of it thorny, it shrank steadily until it was a rill, only 18 inches or so across. It disappeared into a thick clump of bushes. Tricia bowled her way through the close growth beside the stream instead of going around because she was afraid of losing it. Part of her knew that losing it would make no difference because it was almost certainly going nowhere she wanted to go. It was probably going nowhere at all, in fact. But those things seemed to make no difference. The truth was she had formed an emotional attachment to the stream, had bonded with it, her mom would have said, and couldn't bear to leave it. Without it, she would just be a kid wandering around in the deep woods with no plan. The very thought caused her throat to tighten and her heart to speed up. She emerged from the bushes and the stream reappeared. Tricia followed it with her head down and a scowl on her face, as intent as Sherlock Holmes following prints left by the Hound of Baskervilles. She didn't notice the change in the underbrush, from bushes to ferns, nor the fact that many of the trees through which the little stream now wove its way were dead, nor the way the ground under her feet had begun to soften. All of her attention was focused on the stream. She followed it with her head down, a study in concentration. The stream began to spread again, and for 15 minutes or so, this was around noon, she allowed herself to hope that it wasn't going to peter out after all. Then she realized it was also growing more shallow. It really wasn't much more than a series of puddles, most dulled with pond scum and hopping with bugs. 10 minutes or so later, her sneaker disappeared through ground that wasn't solid at all, but only a deceptive crust of moss over a soupy pocket of mud. It flowed over her ankle, and Tricia drew her foot back with a little cry of disgust. The quick, hard yank pulled her sneaker halfway off her foot. Tricia uttered another cry and held onto the trunk of a dead tree while she first wiped her foot with snatches of grass and then put her sneaker back on. With that done, she looked around and saw she had come to a kind of ghost woods, the site of some old fire. Ahead and already around her was a broken maze of long, dead trees. The ground in which they stood was swampy and wet. Rising from flat pools of standing water were turtleback hummocks covered with grass and swatches of weeds. The air hummed with mosquitoes and danced with dragonflies. Now there were more woodpeckers tack-hammering away, dozens of them by the sound. So many dead trees, so little time. Tricia's brook wandered away into this morass and was lost. "What do I do now, huh?" she asked in a teary, tired voice. "Will somebody please tell me that?" There were lots of places to sit and think about it. Tumbles of dead trees everywhere, many still bearing scorch marks on their pallid bodies. The first one she tried, however, gave beneath her weight and sent her spilling to the mucky ground. Tricia cried out as dampness soaked through the seat of her jeans. God, she hated having her seat get wet like that, and lurched upright again. The tree had rotted through in the damp. The freshly broken ends squirmed with woodlice. Tricia looked at them for a moment or two in revolted fascination, then walked to a second down tree. This one she tested first. It seemed solid, and she sat on it warily, looking out at the bog of broken trees, absently rubbing her sore neck and trying to decide what she should do. Although her mind was less clear than it had been when she woke up, a lot less clear, there still seemed to be only two choices. Stay put and hope rescue would come, or keep moving and try to meet it. She supposed that staying in one place made a certain amount of sense, conservation of energy and all that. Also, without the stream, what would she be going toward? Nothing sure, and that was for sure. She might be heading toward civilization. She might be heading away from civilization. She might even get walking in a circle. On the other hand, there's always the other hand, Sugar, her father had once told her. There was nothing to eat here. It stank of mud and rotting trees, and who knew what other gross stuff here. It was ugly here. It was a bummer here. It came to Tricia that if she stayed here and no search party came before dark, she would be spending the night here. It was an awful idea. The little crescent-shaped clearing had been Disneyland compared to this. She stood and peered in the direction the stream had been tending before it petered out. She was looking through a maze of gray tree trunks and lacings of dry, jutting branches. But she thought she could see green beyond them. A rising green. Maybe a hill. And more checkerberries? Hey, why not? She had already passed several more clumps of bushes loaded with them. She should have picked them and put them in her pack, but she had been concentrating so hard on the stream that it just hadn't occurred to her to do so. Now, however, the stream was gone and she was hungry again. Not starving, not yet at least, but hungry, sure. Tricia took two steps forward, tested a patch of soft ground, and watched with profound misgivings as water promptly seeped up around the toe of her sneaker. Was she going in there then? Simply because she thought she saw the other side? There could be quicksand, she muttered. That's right, the cold voice agreed at once. It sounded amused. Quicksand, alligators, not to mention little gray X-Files men with probes to stick up your butt. Tricia gave back the pair of steps she had taken and sat down again. She was gnawing at her lower lip without realizing it. She now hardly noticed the bugs swarming around her. Go or stay? Stay or go? What got her going 10 minutes or so later was blind hope and the thought of berries. Hell, she was ready to try the leaves now, too. Tricia saw herself picking bright red berries on the slope of a pleasant green hill, looking like a girl in a schoolbook illustration. She had forgotten the mud pack on her face and the snarled, dirty spout of her hair. She saw herself picking her way to the crest of the hill, filling her pack with checkerberries, finally reaching the top, looking down, seeing a road. I see a dirt road with fences on both sides, horses grazing, and a barn in the distance, a red one with white trim. Crazy. Totally bizonka. Or was it? What if she was sitting half an hour's walk from safety, still lost because she was afraid of a little goo? Okay, she said, standing up again and nervously readjusting the straps of her pack. Okay, berries ho. But if it gets too gross, I'm going back. She gave the straps one final tug and started forward again, walking slowly over the increasingly wet ground, testing each step as she went, detouring around the skeletal standing trees and the fallen tangles of dead wood. Eventually, it might have been half an hour after starting forward again, it might have been 45 minutes, Tricia discovered what thousands, perhaps even millions, of men and women before her have discovered. By the time it gets too gross, it's often also too late to go back. She stepped from an oozy but stable patch of ground onto a hummock that wasn't a hummock at all, but only a disguise. Her foot went into a cold, vicious substance that was too thick to be water and too thin to be mud. She tilted, grabbing a jutting dead branch, screamed in fright and vexation when it snapped off in her hand. She fell forward into long grass that hopped with bugs. She got a knee under her and yanked her foot back. It came with a loud sucking plop, but her sneaker stayed down there someplace.
No!
She yelled, loud enough to scare a big white bird into flight. It exploded upward, trailing long legs behind it as it became airborne. In another place and time, Tricia would have stared at this exotic apparition with breathless wonder. But now the bird barely registered. She turned around on her knees, her right leg covered with shining black muck up to the knee, and plunged her arm into the water-welling hole, which had temporarily swallowed her foot.
You can't have it!
She shouted furiously.
It's mine, and you can't have it!
She felt around in the cold murk, fingers tearing through membranes of roots or dodging between those too thick to tear. Something that felt alive pressed briefly against her palm and then was gone. A moment later, her hand closed over her sneaker, and she pulled it out. She looked at it, a black mud shoe just right for an all-over mud girl. The very thing. The total puppy shits, Pepsi would have said, and began to cry again. She lifted the sneaker up, tilted it, and a stream of grunge ran out of it. That made her laugh. For a minute or so, she sat on the hummock with her legs crossed and the rescued sneaker in her lap, laughing and crying at the center of a black orbiting universe of bugs, while the dead trees stood sentinel all around her and the crickets hummed. At last her weeping tapered to sniffles, her laughter to choked and somehow humorless giggles. She tore handfuls of grass out of the hummock and wiped the outside of the sneaker as well as she could. Then she opened her pack, tore up the empty lunch bag, and used the pieces as towels to swab out the inside. These pieces she balled up and threw indifferently behind her. If someone wanted to arrest her for littering in this butt-ugly, bad-smelling place, just let them. She stood up, still holding the rescued sneaker in her hand, and looked ahead.
Fuck,
Tricia croaked. It was the first time in her life she had said that particular word out loud. Pepsi said it sometimes, but Pepsi was Pepsi. She could now more clearly see the green she had mistaken for a hill. It was hummocks. That was all. Just more hummocks. Between them was more standing, stagnant water and more trees, most dead, but some with fluffs of green at the top. She could hear frogs croaking. No hill. From bog to swamp. Bad to worse. She turned and looked back, but could no longer tell where she had entered this purgatorial zone. If she'd thought to mark the place with something bright, a piece of her nasty old shredded poncho, say, she might have gone back. But she hadn't, and that was that.
You can go back anyway. You know the general direction.
Maybe, but she wasn't going to follow the kind of thinking that had gotten her into this mess in the first place.